All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we are diving deep into one of the most dramatic stories in the Bible.
It's a doozy.
It is the golden calf incident from Exodus 32,
Yeah.
where the Israelites basically throw a wild party and build an idol
While Moses is up on the
while
mountain.
Moses is getting the Ten Commandments.
Talk about bad timing.
Talk about bad timing. But there's so much more to the story than just bad timing, right?
Absolutely. What's so interesting is that this story, it kind of interrupts the flow of Exodus.
Oh, yeah.
You've got all this detailed instruction for building the tabernacle, the
Right.
symbol of God's presence, and then bam, golden calf chaos.
He's like whiplash.
And then we go back to the tabernacle instructions,
All right.
like this story is intentionally sandwiched in there, like a giant neon sign flashing, pay attention.
Yeah, like a cosmic interruption. And
Exactly.
it makes you wonder, why ask this story so important? Is it
Why?
just a cautionary tale, from ancient history? Or is it reflecting some of our own tendencies even today?
Well, that's what we're going to explore.
Okay.
Because if we dig into the psychology of this moment, you might just see yourself reflected in the Israelites' fear
Oh, if
and
or.
desperation.
Okay, so let's unpack that fear.
Okay.
Just imagine you're in the camp.
Okay.
Moses has been gone for 40 days.
That's a long time.
That's longer than anyone could survive without water in the
In
wilderness.
that wilderness, yeah.
So the tension must have been just incredible.
Oh, absolutely.
It's easy to understand how that fear could start to creep in, right?
Absolutely. And, fear, especially prolonged fear,
Right.
it really has a way of distorting our thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Makes us crave something tangible, something we can control.
I gotta hold on to something,
We need
yeah.
something to hold on to when everything feels so uncertain.
Which is, what makes it even more tragic that while they're down there panicking, God is up on the mountaintop giving instructions for the tabernacle,
Oh,
the
yeah.
symbol of God's guidance and protection, beauty. It's almost ironic,
It's incredibly ironic.
isn't it?
It highlights this key tension between wanting control versus surrendering to God's plan.
Right.
And think about this. They already had the pillar of cloud and fire guiding them.
Right. A pretty awesome, God that goes before them, right?
Exactly. But it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough. They needed something more.
They demanded something more, something they could see and touch.
And speaking of seeing and touching,
Yeah.
did you notice that Aaron specifically uses the Israelites' earrings to fashion the golden calf?
It's such a key detail.
It's not just random gold.
Right. It's not just, oh, hey, we've got some spare gold lying around.
It's personal.
It's precious, it's personal, it's beautiful, and they literally twist it.
Into something so harmful.
Something harmful. It speaks to that seductive power of idolatry.
Yeah.
Taking something good, even sacred, and distorting it into something that ultimately enslaves you. It's
Wow.
like taking a beautiful diamond necklace and using it to choke yourself.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful imagery.
Yeah.
But what do you think was going through their minds when they created this calf?
Right?
Were they just clueless? Or was there something deeper?
I think to understand that, we need to step back
Okay.
and imagine the worldview the Israelites were steeped in. In their world, the lines between the divine and creation, they were blurred. There wasn't this clear separation that we might assume today.
So instead of seeing the golden calf as like a symbol representing God, they believe that it actually was God.
Exactly. And here's the thing, this way of thinking,
Yeah.
it's not just some dusty ancient relic,
You're right.
You see echoes of this today
Oh, interesting.
in the way some people idolize celebrities or money or even political ideologies.
It's so true.
It's this tendency to blur the lines, to see the divine in creation,
Right.
to worship the created rather than the creator.
That's mind-blowing.
We
Yeah.
like to think we're so sophisticated.
Right.
But maybe we're not that different from those Israelites back then.
Maybe not.
Makes you really think about the things that you prioritize, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What are those things that you tend to put your trust in? Those things that maybe even take God's place in your life.
That's a great question.
That's why this whole golden calf incident is so jarring,
It is.
so offensive.
It's not just a silly mistake.
Right?
This is a fundamental misunderstanding of God's nature, his holiness.
Okay, let's talk about holiness for a minute.
Okay.
We hear that word a lot, but what does it really mean?
Yeah, holiness isn't just about moral perfection.
Okay.
It's about God's total otherness, okay? Mm. He is completely and utterly distinct from his creation.
So you're saying no earthly image, no matter how grand or beautiful,
right,
could ever capture his essence.
Exactly. And that's why any attempt to represent God visually,
yeah,
is ultimately flawed. It limits him.
It makes him small. Boxes him in, makes him small.
So back to the story.
Yep.
Picture this. Moses is descending from the mountain, tablets in hand, and he sees this golden calf rave going on.
Oh, yeah.
He's not exactly thrilled, is he?
To put it mildly.
This is where we see this whole story shift from just the seductive nature of idolatry,
right,
to the very real consequences. Right.
Yes.
The covenant is broken.
It is.
God is justifiably angry.
He's got a right to be.
I mean, he could wipe them out, right?
Absolutely. He could wipe them out and be completely in the right.
And this is where we see this incredible drama of, yeah, God's conversation with Moses.
Right.
It's fascinating how God repeatedly refers to them as your people.
Yes.
Even suggesting that he could make a new nation from Moses.
Right.
It's like a test, isn't it?
It is a test. He's testing Moses's loyalty.
His willingness to intercede.
Exactly. Yeah. How would you respond?
I don't even know.
If you were in Moses's shoes.
I'd be speechless. Probably.
Yeah.
But Moses is not speechless.
No, he's not.
We see his anger at the sin, smashing the tablets, throwing that calf into the fire, grinding it to powder,
right,
making them drink it.
It's intense.
That's a pretty intense reaction.
It is, but, you know, it highlights how seriously we need to treat sin.
Mm.
We can't just coddle it and explain it away, oh, pretend it's not a big deal. We need to confront it head on, destroy its power, purge it from our lives.
Just like Moses did with that golden calf.
Exactly.
It's such a powerful image, you know?
It is.
Grinding that calf to dust, making them drink it.
Nobody's using that gold to make another idol.
No, no, they are not.
But then we have this almost comical exchange between Moses and Aaron.
I love this part.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So Moses asks, you know, what did they do to you, Aaron?
Right.
And Aaron's like, well, you know, they gave me the gold and I threw it in the fire. And out popped this calf.
Like it's magic, you know?
Like he's passing the butt or passing the bull.
Passing the bull. I like that.
It's funny, but it's also incredibly sad, isn't it? Because it reveals Aaron's weakness.
Right.
His inability to just take responsibility for his actions. Yeah. He's trying to minimize his involvement.
Deflect, deflect, deflect.
It's just classic denial and self-justification, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
Trying to explain away our mistakes instead of owning them.
We've all done it.
But it brings up an interesting question, you know?
Yeah.
Aaron's the high priest. He should be setting an example. How does he get off so easily?
It's true that Aaron's actions have some serious consequences,
yeah,
for the people. But it seems that God, in his mercy, chooses to continue working through Aaron.
Wow.
Flawed as he is.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a reminder that God can use imperfect people.
To accomplish his purposes.
Yeah, even when we mess up. He can still use us.
And maybe it's also foreshadowing,
yes,
the perfect high priest to come.
Exactly.
One who would never succumb to such weakness.
To
compromise, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have this tension, you know, between, uh-huh, God's anger and his mercy, between Aaron's weakness and God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of it all,
yeah,
Moses steps in as this powerful intercessor.
That's where we'll pick things up next time.
We left off with Moses stepping up as this powerful intercessor, right?
Yeah.
Such a striking contrast to Aaron,
right,
trying to deflect blame.
Yeah.
You know, Moses doesn't shy away from how serious their sin is.
Nope.
But he's willing to stand with them, plead for mercy.
It's remarkable, you know.
Yeah.
Moses, he doesn't just passively accept God's judgment.
He pushes back.
He argues, he pleads, reminds God of his own character, his promises.
He even says, if you won't forgive them, blot me out too.
Yeah.
Bold move, wouldn't you say?
Bold move.
But in that plea, we hit this phrase that's intriguing and a bit unsettling, the book God has written.
Right.
What is this book?
Yeah.
Is this literal, metaphorical? What are we talking about here?
The book mentioned in Exodus 32 is often referred to as the book of life.
The book of life.
You see this concept throughout the Bible, both Old and New Testaments.
Okay.
It's a record of those who belong to God. You know, those destined for eternal life.
So is Moses suggesting that if God doesn't forgive them,
right,
their names will be blotted out, erased, forgotten?
That's one way to interpret it.
That's heavy.
It raises some profound questions, you know, about belonging, about judgment, about God's sovereignty.
It does.
And this connects to a very human desire.
Oh, yeah.
The desire to be remembered, to know that our lives matter, you know.
To matter.
That our lives have significance.
The book of life, it represents ultimate significance.
It does. To be included is to be eternally known.
Wow.
And valued by God.
That idea is comforting and terrifying at the same time.
Oh, absolutely.
It really is. The stakes couldn't be higher. But back to the story, how does God respond?
Right.
To this impassioned plea. I mean, does he just say, okay, fine, I forgive them?
Well, he relents from wiping them out completely. But there are consequences.
Oh.
The last verse of Exodus 32 mentions a plague.
Okay.
That came upon the people because of what they did, and specifically because of that calf that Aaron made.
So it's not just a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. There's real pain, real suffering.
Yes.
Do we know anything about this plague? Any theories?
It's interesting. You know, the plague is connected to the calf.
Okay.
Which was associated with fertility and sexual rituals in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
Some scholars have suggested it might have been a sexually transmitted disease.
That's a thought-provoking idea.
It is.
It certainly fits with the themes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of idolatry and the dangers of blurring boundaries.
Absolutely.
Both physically and spiritually.
Exactly. A reminder that sin has consequences.
Yeah.
Even if those consequences aren't always immediate or obvious.
It's like that saying, you reap what you sow.
Right. You can't escape the natural consequences of your actions.
It's not about God being vindictive.
It's not.
Is it?
No, it's about the inherent order of the universe.
Right.
Think of it like gravity.
Okay.
God didn't create gravity to punish people.
Right.
But it's a law of nature. Defy that law, you're going to get hurt.
You will, yeah.
Same principle applies to spiritual and moral laws.
We've talked about Moses' role as intercessor, the consequences of sin.
Yeah.
This book of life concept.
Right.
But there's another aspect I find fascinating.
What's that?
Moses' reaction to the golden calf.
He's not happy.
He does not just stand there shaking his head.
No.
Smashes the tablets.
Throws the calf in the fire.
Grinds it to powder, makes them drink it. This is not just anger. This is righteous fury.
It highlights the seriousness of sin and the need for radical action. You can't ignore sin, rationalize it, pretend it doesn't exist.
Right.
You got to confront it head on.
You do.
Destroy its power. Purge it from your life.
It's like he's saying, this idol has no power over you anymore. I'm breaking its hold.
Powerful visual.
Powerful. Nobody's using that gold to make another idol.
Yeah.
But then after this, we get that almost comical exchange between Moses and Aaron.
I love that part.
Oh, it's so good.
So good.
You know, Moses is like, what did these people do to you to lead them to such great sin?
And Aaron's like, well, you know, they gave me the gold, I threw it in the fire, and poof, out came this calf.
It wasn't my fault. It just magically appeared.
Right.
It's almost laughable.
It is.
But it reveals that human tendency, right?
Oh, yeah.
To avoid responsibility.
Absolutely.
Have you ever been in a situation where you tried to explain away your mistakes?
All the time.
Instead of owning them?
All the time.
Classic denial, self-justification.
We've all done it.
But it brings us back to a question we touched on earlier. How does Aaron, the high priest, get off so easily?
Right. He's the spiritual leader.
He's supposed to be setting an example.
Yeah.
Seems like he gets a pretty light sentence considering what happened. What do you make of that?
It's true that Aaron's actions have serious consequences for the people.
Right.
But it seems that God, in his mercy, chooses to continue working through Aaron despite his failings.
Hmm.
Maybe it's a reminder that God's grace is bigger
than our mistakes.
Yeah, even our flawed, imperfect selves.
He can still use us.
Exactly.
Encouraging thought.
It is.
Reminds me of that verse where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more.
Beautiful.
But going back to Moses.
Okay.
His intercession for the people is such a powerful example of prayer.
It is.
Wrestling with God.
Daring to challenge the Almighty.
It's not just thy will be done.
No, not at all.
He's actively engaged. Presenting his case.
Appealing to God's character.
His promises.
It reminds us that we can approach God honestly.
Authentically, boldly.
In prayer, yes.
It's not just asking for forgiveness. It's about identifying with the people he's praying for.
Absolutely.
If you won't forgive them, blot me out too.
Yeah.
Putting his own life on the line.
Self-sacrifice.
Solidarity.
A powerful model of leadership.
It is.
Standing with your people, even when they messed up royally.
It's not about condoning the sin.
No.
But loving them enough to fight for them.
To plead for mercy.
And in that plea, there's that book of life again.
Right.
This book that seems to hold the names of those who belong to God, destined for eternal life. What is it?
It's likely a metaphor.
Okay.
For God's perfect knowledge, his eternal plan. But it's a metaphor that carries immense weight.
It does.
It speaks to the reality of judgment, of accountability.
All consequences.
The eternal consequences of our choices.
Adds another layer of depth to this story, doesn't it?
It does.
This isn't just about a golden calf. It's about life and death.
Belonging, separation.
The very nature of God's relationship with humanity.
Absolutely. And it's a theme that echoes throughout the Bible.
Right.
Culminating in the book of Revelation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Where we see the book of life opened and the names of the redeemed read aloud.
Powerful image.
Powerful image of hope.
Of finality.
And finality, yeah.
So this ancient story, it has some surprisingly relevant implications for us today.
It does.
It makes you wonder, what would it look like for us to confront our own golden calves?
Right.
Those idols we cling to, the things we put before God.
Those are some weighty questions.
They are. What does it mean to truly intercede for others? To stand in the gap for those who have strayed?
Big questions to ponder.
They are, and we'll continue exploring those as we move into the final part of our deep dive.
Wow. You know, we've been unpacking this intense story.
It is intense.
Of the golden calf, and it's clear that it's about so much more than just a bad decision out in the desert, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we've seen the Israelites' fear, this desire for control, the blurring of the boundaries between God and creation, yeah, the consequences of sin, and then that powerful image of the book of life.
Yeah.
It's a lot to process.
It is a lot to chew on.
But as we wrap up this deep dive,
yeah,
what stands out to you as the most relevant takeaway for us today?
You know, for me, one of the most striking takeaways is that reminder.
Okay.
That even those closest to God, those who've experienced his power,
right,
his faithfulness firsthand, mm-hmm, can still fall prey to fear.
And idolatry.
Yeah, it's a sobering thought.
It is. It makes you realize that none of us are immune to those temptations.
Exactly.
We all have our golden calves, the things we tend to put our trust in, those things we elevate above God in our lives.
Yeah. And it's so easy, you know, to get caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
To make choices based on fear or wanting control.
Without thinking about the consequences.
Yeah. Without thinking it through.
And that's why I think this story is so important.
It is.
It's a wake-up call.
Yes.
To really examine our own hearts, to be honest about the things that we're tempted to place on the throne of our lives, you know?
What are those things you find yourself clinging to?
Yeah.
For security, for mm-hmm, comfort, even when you know deep down
mm-hmm,
that they can't truly satisfy?
It's a tough question, but an important one. You know, we need to shine a light on those dark corners of our hearts, the places where we've let those idols take root.
Yeah.
And speaking of shining a light, another takeaway for me is this idea of righteous anger.
Right.
You know, Moses didn't just shrug and say, oh, well, they messed up.
No.
He was filled with righteous anger at the sin.
He was.
He took action, destroyed the idol, called the people to repentance.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, what does righteous anger look like today?
That's a great question. Righteous anger, it's not about losing your temper.
No.
Lashing out.
Right.
In some destructive way. It's about a deep, passionate concern for what is right.
Mm.
Hatred of sin and its consequences.
Yeah.
It's about standing up for truth.
Even when it's unpopular.
When it's uncomfortable.
So it's not just about getting mad. It's channeling that anger into action.
Exactly.
It's about saying, this is wrong. I won't stand for it.
And that takes courage.
It does. It's so much easier to just look the other way, pretend everything's fine.
Oh, it's way easier.
But this story challenges us.
To be people of conviction.
Yeah, people who are willing to stand up.
For what's right, even when it's hard.
And remember, we don't have to do it alone.
We don't. That's the beauty of it.
We have the example of Moses who interceded.
Yeah.
We have God's presence and power to help us in our battles.
To help us fight those battles.
Against sin, temptation.
Exactly.
It brings us back to this idea of intercession, of standing in the gap for others.
Yeah.
Just like Moses pleaded for the Israelites, we're called to pray for those who have strayed.
To intercede, lift them up.
To lift them up before God.
Yeah.
And it's not just praying for forgiveness. It's praying for transformation, healing, restoration.
Standing with them.
Standing with them in their brokenness.
In their brokenness.
Pointing them toward the one who can make them whole.
That's a beautiful picture.
It is. It's like we're weaving this tapestry.
Of grace.
Thread by thread, prayer by prayer.
Act of kindness by act of kindness.
You know, those acts of intercession, those whispers of hope.
They're heard by God.
they're remembered.
Recorded in that book of remembrance.
It reminds us that our lives have an impact.
Absolutely.
Not just on those around us, but for eternity.
Eternity.
What we say, what we do, how we love, how we serve.
Those things matter.
They matter. They leave a mark on the world.
And they echo in the halls of heaven.
So as we conclude this deep dive into Exodus 32,
yeah.
I'm left with this renewed sense of both the gravity and the hope that this story offers.
It's powerful.
It's a reminder of the danger of letting fear and idolatry take root. But it's also a testament to God's mercy.
And grace.
His willingness to forgive and restore.
And the power of intercession.
To change lives.
Absolutely.
What will you take away from this deep dive?
Yeah, what will you do differently? Today, this week, this year.
Because of what we've explored together.
May this ancient story continue to challenge and inspire us.
As we navigate.
As we navigate the complexities of faith, of fear.
To the human heart.
And may we be people who not only recognize our own golden calves, but who have the courage to smash them.
To stand in the gap for others.
And to live lives that are worthy of being remembered.
Not just by those around us.
But by God himself.